And now, it's time for the Talk of the Northwest, the 9 to noon show with Greg Hughes on Highland Radio.
Hello and a very good morning to you this Friday, the 1st of December 2023. It is approaching 4 minutes past nine and you're very welcome along to the 9 till noon show. Just to give you a quick heads up, a little later on after 10 o'clock, in fact, Seamus Gunn will be joining us to answer your legal questions. So if you have a question you would like us to put to Seamus Gunn, now is a good time to get in touch with us. 086 60 25000, and I can best guarantee that I'll get your question answered or at least put to Seamus Gunn on your behalf. But the business for the next 55 minutes is that of looking over some of the big stories of the day and of the week, and we are doing that today in the company of our Friday panel, Dr. Andrea Redmond, artist and community development worker. Good morning, Andrea. Thank you for joining us. It's great to have you with us. John McAteer, editor of the Tyrconnell Tribune newspaper. John, good morning.
Good morning to you, Greg.
Thanks for being with us, as always. And Dr. Marie Hainsworth, manager of Donegal Domestic Violence Services. Good morning to you, Marie.
Good morning, Greg.
Right. All the papers today, we'll stay briefly on this, all the papers today, of course, are leading with the news that singer and songwriter Shane McGowan has died at the age of 65. He was best known as the frontman of the Pogues, of course, whose single Fairy Tale of New York has become a Christmas staple. McGowan's death came after a prolonged period of ill health, including time spent in intensive care. The singer had been using a wheelchair following a series of falls, including breaking his pelvis in 2015. There's been a huge outpouring of sadness right across Ireland, and indeed, given the status of Shane McGowan, right across the world. John McAteer, does Mr. McGowan hold a particular place in your heart?
I think anybody that has listened to McGowan for the last 40 years, he holds a very special place in everybody's heart, because for the first time, he gave Irish music a completely new dimension, and that he mixed it with punk, and he made a huge success of it. And that he mixed the violin and the accordion and the banjo with all of those strange sounds, and he made it work. His Fairy Tale of New York, which was being played there about 8 o'clock this morning, kind of the first feeling of Christmas about it, you know. He had his demons, he had his drugs and his drink problems and all that. Nevertheless, he was an iconic artist, born of Irish parents from Tipperary. He made it very, very big time. Could have been much, much bigger, but he had very successful albums, some great, great songs, you know. And as I say, The Fairy Tale of New York and A Pair of Brown Eyes and all of this kind of thing, it resonated right around the world wherever music was played. And his death at 65, the latest in a long number of famous names dying this year, including Sinead O'Connor. It's a huge, huge loss, because he brought something with his lyrics and with his music that nobody has done before and probably will never do again. And I've played his music quite a bit out in the car. You just put it on there in the background and listen to it. Half of the time I didn't understand the lyrics that he was singing, but when you read the lyrics on paper, they made absolute sense. He was a true Irishman. He was very, very Republican. All of those years ago, over 40 years ago, he came to Pubble na Féile in Belfast, and he came there for several years afterwards and stayed for several days. And he made a huge success of that, because he just wasn't in your face. He came to do the music and be part of the crack and have the pint. And I heard Gerry Adams on another station yesterday evening extolling his virtues, and he couldn't have sung his praises any higher than he did. And he is a big, big loss. But he has left a great legacy of music behind him.
Yeah, Marie Hainsworth, John mentioned there, obviously, the loss of Shane McGowan this year. Sinead O'Connor, I think my favourite duet of his is between Sinead and Shane. Of course, then, Christy Dignam as well. You know, that's three big heavy hitters of Irish music gone in one year.
Yeah, and I mean, I grew up in England at the time, so, you know, the Sex Pistols and all the influences, you know, around that time, you know, it was, you know, I am of that vintage. So, yeah, it is a kind of a sad loss, you know. It's like there's a whole sector of not just your life, but, you know, what you're brought up with has kind of gone. But it will live on. I mean, he was a musician. He was a poet as well, as most songwriters are. And I think that piece kind of gets lost sometimes, you know. It's the artistic element of it, you know. He makes the headlines for sometimes the wrong reasons, maybe, but what he did in the right sense in terms of the art was just amazing.
Yeah, and to leave a legacy and a body of work like he has, it's a life to be celebrated. I mean, obviously people can go through a period or a sense of loss, but I mean, he's left so much behind him as well, too. That has to be, Andrea, that has to be something that's to be celebrated as well.
Well, I think he was a genius. He had an avid interest in Irish history and politics. Very, very intelligent. I see him as iconic, that he'll be the Brendan Behan of our time. He gave a voice, as Marie was saying, to the Irish migrants, the children of Irish migrants in England, and brought them, introduced them and pride in their Irish culture, heritage, and their music. But his, as Marie was saying, he's a poet. Look at the lyrics. They are extraordinary. And I think that aspect of his music and his life will be cherished for a lifetime.
Indeed, and may he rest in peace. I'm sure there'll be much more, certainly music from Shane McGowan and the Pogues throughout the course of the day on this station and right across radio, I'm sure. Pressures continuing to grow on the Minister for Justice, Helen McEntee, and the Garda Commissioner, Drew Harris, over the handling of riots in Dublin last Thursday. Sinn Féin, as far as I'm aware, is yet to table a motion of no confidence in Justice Minister Helen McEntee. They've yet to decide whether or not, but they are leaning that way. I think they've a deadline of 11 o'clock this afternoon before they can decide, if they haven't already. On if he'd resigned, Drew Harris said, "I'm not going to resign. I care too much about the job. I've too much work to do. And part of that's responding to this. So I've no intention of resigning." I'll start with you, John, as I did just at the top of the show. Should either of the two consider their positions, in your view?
Yeah, I think they should be gone. Public have lost confidence in both of them. The Garda Representative Association vote in September of 98.7%. Voting no confidence in their boss. 116 people voted for him. Now, that should have been a clarion call that he should be out the door instantly, because this has never happened in Ireland before. It's not that Drew Harris mightn't be an honourable, decent man and all that thing. He's just not a good Garda commissioner, and he's going to leave a very poor legacy behind him. Because, like, we saw the incidents outside the Dáil in September when the Dáil reopened. And, I mean, it was disgraceful. It was out of control. The idea that a group could bring a scaffold right up within sight of the Dáil was just an absolute scandal. But last Thursday night was just out of this world, insofar as you got this feeling for half an hour or more that the centre of Dublin was burning, it was being looted, it was being wrecked. Gardaí had lost control of it because they didn't seem to have the manpower and they didn't seem to have the equipment or the methodology to deal with it. Yet ever since, the minister and the commissioner have been more or less every day, there's more positive news, there's more Gardaí, there's going to be more high-vis presence, there's going to be more money, there's going to be... Where's all this going to come out of? I think Helen McEntee gave 10 million the time the American was stabbed in Dublin for more presence of Gardaí in the city. There's another 5 million announced last week. There's going to be stronger pepper spray and there's going to be more high-vis jacks and all this kind of thing. Yet, in the aftermath of it, both the commissioner and the minister said that all the resources that they required were there on site. That was absolutely untrue, because I was talking to people and getting callbacks from people on their way to Dublin, and there were more and more Garda cars passing them out on blue lights, and they knew that there was something terrible going on. No, the Garda need a total revamp, because... Harris is there since 5 years last summer. He got his term extended by 2 years, and he'll probably go out on a high and go on to some.
Why should Helen McEntee go, though? I mean, that is,
She's the minister, and she has failed. She has failed to grasp the enormity of the problem. Policing has changed enormously. Mm-hmm. We don't have the manpower. You know, for the first time ever, senior officers are leaving the force in numbers.
Do you think, too, one of the perhaps biggest errors she made was that walkabout of Dublin, when she said Dublin was safe, when, you know, to be honest with you, I know lots of people down there, students, and they don't feel safe walking around Dublin. So for someone to say it's safe, I think that was perhaps one of her biggest, one of the errors she made.
That was going to be her calling card, Dublin is safe. And the fact that she walked about with Pascal Mooney and a few others, it absolutely meant nothing. It's just a piece of PR and nothing else. Dublin is not safe and hasn't been for years. And in fact, you could extend that out to almost every big town, including Donegal. These places are not safe because Gardaí have yielded control to those who control the drugs and to those who are involved in crime. We don't have Gardaí in Donegal that have a visible presence anywhere, because I'm out late and early and I just don't meet the Gardaí. I always feel secure when I do. But no, Helen McEntee has failed in her responsibility to grasp the enormity of that. The fact that so many senior officers are leaving has to be a wake-up call. And there's the second most senior post in the Gardaí is lying there vacant. None of the five assistant commissioners will apply for it because it's going to add another 5,000 a month to their pensions and cuts. Drew Harris, I think, after 5 years, the fact that he has lost the total confidence of his own membership says it all.
Okay, we'll come back to that. I want to bring in our other guests as well. Dr. Andrea Redmond, do you have faith in either Drew Harris or Justice Minister for Justice Helen McEntee?
No, I don't, and I agree with a lot with what John has said. I the whole issue of their aware preparedness for what happened on Thursday, there were indications and people had been warning for months and months, if not years, about the rise of influencers, the rise of hate talk of the far right. There were incidents where there were protests at houses holding asylum seekers. During the summer, there were groups that were protesting at libraries about LGBTQ information in books and libraries and in schools. The Garda had a softy-softy approach to these people, but yet, again, look at the way they treated middle-aged women, Debenham workers who were on peaceful.
Yeah, and just in relation to that, it wasn't accidentally, it was a policy to softly treat them, and I'm not saying they should have treated them otherwise, in that they said
exactly.
they want to martyr themselves. This was actual policy.
They can't say they were surprised by what happened. These far-right influencers, and there's media outlets, there's celebrities, and there's a lot of people on social media, and they have been stirring the pot and exacerbating the situation. And John was talking about the fear people have, the fear that people of other cultures have in Dublin or even in Donegal. And John makes an excellent point about the rank and file Garda. When those people don't have faith in the commissioner. But I mean, really, this is all moot because when the election comes, McEntee probably will lose her job. If Sinn Féin becomes the largest party, I don't think they have much faith in Harris. Harris is not liked in the North. There's issues to do with recent past occurrences and things like that. So, I can't understand why they weren't prepared, better prepared. They knew what was coming. Things were escalating on the ground. And they've left the situation. Now they're running to play catch up.
Yeah, and I think in suggesting that they didn't see it coming, and I've mentioned this before during the week, creates another problem in how could they not see it coming? Because they clearly don't have people who understand the country or understand social media, because it was flagged long in advance. But also it seems that when they do have to respond quickly to something, there's not actually a plan as to how to do that in terms of accessing equipment, being mobilised, being organised, which is a fundamental issue if you don't have that in
Greg, there was actually commentary that actually Garda themselves were WhatsApping other Garda to come for assistance. Do you know, that shows how pathetic their planning for major incidents like this is. When the Garda themselves, he left those members of the force vulnerable and in a very precarious situation, and we're only lucky that somebody wasn't seriously hurt.
Okay, Dr. Marie Hainsworth, what do you think? Because, you know, at the end of the day, I've spoken to you on a couple of occasions off the back of initiatives or legislation or laws or rules that Helen McEntee has brought forward. I mean, there is a strong argument to say that she's been really quite progressive, particularly in the area of violence towards women, women's rights and what have you. But obviously, you're judged by your most recent performance. What's your overview? Do you believe both Mr. Harris and Ms. McEntee's positions are untenable, or do you believe otherwise?
Well, I do believe otherwise. I do like Minister McEntee for some of the other work that she's doing. But you're in an unfortunate position because the only way you're going to have a very effective policing solution to these kind of situations is if they happen on a regular basis. And we don't really want that. So, you know, it is, you know, what I would like to be looking at more is less focus on the last resort policing and looking at the rioting and what actually led up to that in the process. Because, you know, OK, people are focusing on the right wing movement, but they're mobilizing a sector of the society that's quite vulnerable and has that's where the real problem is, you know. And so why should the Minister of Justice be the one that takes the fall when actually it's the other ministers that are not? You know, what about housing? What about community development supports? What about, you know, infrastructure into many of these community areas? Because you're just creating a pool of people who are going to be vulnerable to be manipulated and to allow this to happen. So, you know, I think there's a lot of, you know, and it is, you know, opposition politics reaction, you know, they're looking for a headline, but they're not really addressing the problem either. You know, I think, you know, in terms of the Guardian, Drew Harris, I think that's a separate issue. Yeah, maybe it is time for him to go in terms of what's happening. But at the same time, you know, this is a bigger government issue and they've not addressed a huge amount of what's led up to this. So the whole government needs to be held to account on this, not just one minister.
Yeah, and you know, I have not heard the conversation about, you know, why do these young people, predominantly young people who probably couldn't really, they're not probably really that interested in immigration as such in any meaningful way, right? How could they be so easy and manipulative? What are they going through? You know, but no one wants to talk about that because I think the opposition are afraid that they'd be seen to be judging a community or something like that there. And the government can't really, because they'd probably be exposing their own lack of investment or focus in particular areas where people feel forgotten by society, perhaps. Now, there was a broad group of people that ended up on the streets of Dublin, but lots of them came from underprivileged areas, places that really have lacked investment and development for years. But no one seems to, unless I've missed the conversation, want to talk about that.
No, and that's where community policing should also be engaging, because they're the communities they should be linked into. That's where they're going to get their intelligence about what's coming forward. And that's where you're going to have your relationships that hopefully would prevent situations like this. So it is a bigger issue, you know, in terms of it's not just about mobilising and reacting. And I think there's a huge focus on the Guard didn't react. I think given what they've been exposed to up until now, they probably did react as well as you're going to get, you know. I wouldn't be putting all the focus on that. I think it is a bigger problem, and I wouldn't like that to be lost in the conversation.
Because I was watching it, and you had, you know, two dozen Gardaí with shields and 300 or 400 people barging past them. It's hard to imagine what more they could do with the equipment that they had. But anyway, that's perhaps part of the responsibility of Drew Harris. Did you want to come in there, Andrea, whilst...
I did. Yeah. I agree totally with Marie. It's a broader... I mean, a lot of those young people who are being influenced, or a lot of those people who were out in the street, as Marie rightly says, aren't interested in immigration. But those young people are part of a different disenfranchised group. I mean, the issues of homelessness and the lack of services in working class areas in Dublin is the responsibility of successive governments, Fianna Fáil, Fianna Gael governments. I mean, these young people are socially excluded. The inequalities, the lack of services for mental health, literacy, educational attainment and things like that. And it is a broader picture than just what happened, you know, in the far right. It's these communities need more services, community policing. They need more community support, domestic violence services, mental health, so forth. And Marie is absolutely right. It is a bigger picture, and it is responsibility of all the government, not just Helen McEntee.
Yep. John McAteer, last word before break. We're going to sort of stay in and around this subject after the break, but did you want to...
You know something, it's 1982, if you remember, that Tony Gregory got a deal with Charlie Howie for €80 million for inner city Dublin because of the deprivation and because of the neglect and because of the lack of opportunity and because of the drug dealing and all of the dredges of society that you could mention. Now, that would have been a good deal. €80 million back then was a huge amount of money. Charlie Howie got into government on the single vote of Tony Gregory. Unfortunately, in November of that year, that government collapsed and that deal was probably lost in the main. I heard this debated several times on radio and TV in the past week that the government is throwing money at all of these things. It doesn't seem to be working. I know that COVID left a huge deficit in areas like inner city Dublin that, that they're still trying to pick up on. But there's a legacy and a legend there. There's drug dealing. Yes, we've been watching a funeral on television yesterday and the violence after it, you know. Dublin is a powder keg. So are many major towns and villages. The Gardaí numbers and the machinery that they need on the site of a scene of that kind that needs to be got there within minutes, they don't have it. I mean, to think now that the commissioner has had to make a case, a business model, to get two water cannons. I mean, where are the horses? Where are all these things? We're living in a much more violent society. Gardaí are, in effect, their community police. But there has to be armed with the Gardaí that are trained and,
well, I'll come back
and capable of managing.
I have
that.
A question quite specific to that, but what we'll do is we'll take a break and come back to that. So in the wake of those riots, more Gardaí are going to be given more pepper spray, stronger pepper spray. There's going to be tasers given to Gardaí. Water cannons will be available. Smaller shields that we see in continental Europe. Facial recognition technologies going to be fast-tracked. Gardaí are now going to be given access to CCTV audio to help with prosecutions. Dr. Marie Hainsworth, have you any concerns that according to a lot of what we've heard today, you know, failures of the Garda Commissioner are now being used to really change quite significantly the model of policing in this country? And if, you know, this is, it's not only going to be used necessarily against, you know, Gardaí's rampaging in Dublin. This is going to be a change on how it's employed on the streets of Letterkenny, Sligo Town, Buncrana, Dunloe. Have you any concerns that all of this is coming down the tracks now? Because they do say, you know, never waste a crisis.
Well, and that is the problem, isn't it? People, you know, in the background who've been waiting for these kind of resources and believe that that's the approach to policing are going to absolutely use this opportunity now to get everything. The question is, like, with all of these resources, people need to be trained in how to use them. Like, I mean, we have an armed response in Donegal, but sometimes you can still be waiting 2 hours for a call out, you know. And as John was saying, we are living in a more violent society. We do need to have more appropriate responses, but they do need to be appropriate, you know, and people need to be trained, but they also need to be, it's all right putting all that focus in Dublin, but it did cross my mind, what if those riots had occurred in one of the other cities? Like, we could mobilise quickly into Dublin because that is the centre of it all.
I mean,
all.
What's but going I mean, to happen when the first person is tasered on Letterkenny Main Street, or the first person is hit with pepper spray and a bystander gets pepper spray in their eyes and they start contacting programmes like this and saying, what's going on in this country? You know what I mean? I think people need to truly think
America
as to
that,
what
know,
type of policing we're moving towards here.
Yeah, you know, in America that there's going to be cases where you've got Gardaí and you're putting Gardaí under pressure to respond in situations without probably appropriate training, and they are going to react, you know. And I mean, you saw that all the time. We've seen it all the time where you've got younger recruits going into the army, always put on the front line, and it's your least experienced people often who are the ones that are left having to carry the can on this. So, you know, if I was, you know, involved with the Gardaí at the moment and certainly kind of like the union side of things, I would be wanting to know that there's absolute safeguards there for my members if they're being asked to manage all of this. Because, like
but the
you're
Guards
saying,
are looking for greater latitude to use batons so as that they can use them without fear of being suspended or massive investigations. I suppose now we can extend that to the pepper spray and to the tasers. Do you know what I mean? All of this now is being introduced and it will be in place in the long term. It's not a short-term measure. Andrea, do you have any concerns that, or do you believe the country that we live in really requires this type of policing?
No, I don't. And a lot of human rights organisations are alarmed at kind of these punitive measures. I mean, tasers kill. And as Marie rightly says, Garda have to be trained properly in how to use this equipment. I think it's a case that we need more Garda, not more technology. Garda numbers, community policing would be much more effective, more Garda on the streets. When people like ECHR, you know, rights organizations are flagging these as punitive, as dangerous, not only to, you know, ordinary civilians, that we need to stop and rather than have McAtee and that jump in to kind of these measures, we need to think, plan and try and think more effectively how to use Garda resources. Mm.
Because I put this to Piers Doherty yesterday, and I didn't hear any opposition to this direction of traffic. You know, let's imagine what it might look like. Water cannons indiscriminately, potentially, being used on the streets of Dublin. People being tased, sprayed with pepper spray, the overspill and all that kind of stuff. John, do you believe this is where we have to be going, or do you have any concerns?
First of all, do we believe every last promise that's been made in the last week? There's millions and millions been promised. This government is so, so good at promising. And they have
it's
been
far
the most
easier
promising
to
government
order. But it's far easier to order 400 taser guns and more pepper spray than it is to get 2,000 Garda recruits through Temple Moor. So it is probably more likely we will see this stuff acted upon.
I kind of believe that neither of those things are going to happen, especially in the area of Garda recruitment. Because for some reason, Gardaí are leaving in too many numbers. The force is in a very depleted state. I think we have less Gardaí now than we had 12 years ago. There's something inherently wrong there because we have a much more, very much more mobile group of
thugs. Well, we have a 25% increase in population, as well as that.
There's high level robberies going on, and Gardaí are now under such a scrutiny themselves. The role of GSOC is a major concern to the Gardaí. They don't know what, if they take action to stop a crime, are they going to be hauled up before GSOC? Are they going to end up in court? Are they going to be charged? That situation has developed during Drew Harris's period, and that's one of the reasons I'm citing why he should not be there. Gardaí can't have confidence that with the weapons that they do have already, that should they're out on a car chase and somebody gets killed, as has happened, are they going to end up in court? Are they going to be charged with manslaughter or what? Surely a police force deserves better than that. We depend very heavily on the Gardaí are the heartbeat of our society. Mm. And if they haven't the safety precautions that they can rely on and be assured to go out and use. I mean, the whole idea of Gardaí out in single vehicles in the middle of the night, you don't know what car you're stopping or who's in it. And that's going on regularly.
Well, and an awful lot of the guards actually can't even drive under blue lights and sirens because there isn't adequate training. There are also, I mean, we also have to factor in here, do we, that this is going to have an impact on here in the Northwest for maybe 2, 3, 4, or 5 years, because it can't be ignored, whomever is in power, that the media, national media, is based in Dublin. The Dáil and where decisions are made in Dublin. And unfortunately, what we have seen in recent years, and it's demonstrable, I can demonstrate this, is that sometimes resources follow where the media coverage is. So how many Gardaí are we going to get up here in the Northwest when you can have such an impact in chucking Gardaí at the Dublin problem? Marie, that would be a concern I would have. And I think it could run for a number of years, that Dublin will draw any resources almost that are available. Not any, but a significant proportion of them.
Well, it does anyway, because, I mean, the Garda Training College is up there, so all the recruits start up there to start with. And then, you know, really, who wants to move out to the area? Like, people are trying to get back maybe to the areas that they live in, but, you know, are they following promotions? And guards can be travelled all over the country. Dublin's going to provide more opportunities. So if you want a career, you're going to be heading back there frequently. So, yeah, I mean, we know that the fall in terms of guards, I mean, I do training with Garda recruits and, you know, a few years ago you'd have 15, 20 in the class. And now if it is 2 or 3, you're lucky, you know, so it is a big problem here.
Yeah. Just they're simply not there. And I mean, this pretense and these promises, I don't believe any of those things until they're delivered. I think the Gardaí are in a much weaker position now than they were 5 years ago. And that's one of the better reasons why Drew Harris should go, because he was brought in to clean up the force, as it was put at the time, and to project a new way forward. I don't think he has done any of those things, and he's into his last couple of years. I would like to think that a new commissioner will be appointed and that Harris will be replaced, because it's going to take somebody with a higher degree of sharpness, and also must have the confidence of his membership. There's no big organisation that's going to survive if you don't have the full confidence of your membership. You're never going to have 100% confidence.
And there's been significant changes. We have calls now. If you call Milford Garda Station, your call's triaged in Galway. That was a pilot. I believe it is still the case. You know, and then they decide whether or not there is a response or not. And we have seen a different style of policing. I think it's evident that there's less guards out and about as well. I don't think that's controversial or anti anything or other. I mean, it's pretty clear that's the case, Andrea. I mean, you know, you do, it's spot the guard. Do you know what I mean? You just
you
simply
be,
don't
you
see
have
them
to
about.
The guards. A friend of our family is a guard, and he, you know, he is on the road in the patrol car on his own. And as John says, who's he going to meet on the road, and what can he do? We need more guard, and I think your story raised in the Doyle that, you know, the allocation of guards and Donegal is woeful. But, I mean, you call Milford and you go to Galway, and do they know where Duhery is? Do they know different areas? And we need, and the guards we do have are excellent. Some of the community guard we have are fantastic, and we've had to deal with them in Duhery for the last few months, and they've been excellent, but they're stretched to the breaking point. And I think, you know, I think we've all come to the conclusion that both Harris and McEntee will be going, and what we need is a new Minister of Justice.
Well, now, that way's doing a bit of heavy lifting, firstly, because I don't have an opinion, and Dr. Hainsworth... Dr. Hainsworth quite favourable towards Justice McEntee.
You do have an opinion, Greg. It's just that you don't want to express it to us.
Thankfully, I've obviously hid it from you, John. So that's the job achieved. Okay, listen, we're going to take another quick break. Go ahead, John.
I don't think that's happening, actually.
Really? Well, I thought I'd been quite balanced here. Okay. We'll be back with more after these. Okay, we're in the company of our panel today, Dr. Andrea Redmond, John McAteer, and Dr. Marie Hainsworth. The texter says, Greg, society is broken. No one has respect for each other anymore. It's a sad day when you see what happened in Dublin. Not much word on the children that got injured or the carer. How do you go about fixing that? God knows it's a hard task. But John, I might come to you on that one, just given the fact that you're an editor of a newspaper, in that, you know, routine updates on the condition of the victims of anything, be it a crime, road traffic collision, they aren't routinely available. There's not a cover-up as such here, in that I don't think that the general public can expect daily updates on the condition of people who are in hospital. It just doesn't happen. It's not specific to this case.
Yeah, they don't respond to these things very clearly. It doesn't seem to be their function. So you have to ask then, whose function is it? Just earlier this week, we were trying to get information about a suspect device at a school in Milford. And everybody that should be talking to you went to ground. And then it was all over. There was a flood of emails coming in to say that, oh, yes, there was a suspect device and it's been safely dealt with. That was 5 o'clock on Tuesday, Wednesday evening, whenever it was. But there seems to be a breakdown in communications here right across the government services. If it suits, they're going to respond, and they're going to respond regularly. But if there's any doubts about it at all, they just go to ground. There's a government information service there. I'm not exactly sure what they do because I rarely ever hear from them.
Yeah, but can we expect updates on people's private medical business?
It's in the public interest. That case, not on an ongoing private basis, but if there's an incident of that kind in Dublin where those five people were the subject of a horrendous attack, of course there's an interest in it. They don't have to be named. They shouldn't be named. Suspects shouldn't be named until they're charged. There's all of these things going on here, but there's an insatiable desire. The red top newspapers are going to get the details and put them out there anyway. So they're leaving the authorities in a no hope position, mm-hmm. because if you don't say anything, it's going to be identified anyway.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
That happened in the UK, didn't it? Remember when the body of the woman was discovered, but they didn't know what had happened. It was in the river, but there was a whole then handling over the way the police interacted with the media, and the fact that by not giving information appropriately, stuff got out on social media.
And then you had the amateur detectives then that descended on that area as well, Marie, to fill that gap. So you say, Marie, do you believe that in the interests of national interest or public interest, that the victims of this awful attack last Thursday, that their conditions should be updated publicly regularly?
No, but I'm saying there should be a liaison in terms of the media around, you know, balancing what is in the public interest. They probably want to know that they're okay.
Yeah.
No, it's not that people should just disappear. And I think the other point that was made is, instead of focusing on that incident at all, it was all overtaken by the riots and everything else. So I think there was a sidelining. Oh, that's what it felt like. So even just to kind of have some way to be able to release a press statement or to liaise with the press, but, you know, obviously to protect identities and personal information. Mm-hmm. But you're balancing that public interest, because if in that gap is also where people will get frustrated.
Right, so, and in relation to that, if you don't mind, of course, there are numerous videos of citizen journalists or election candidates saying that they have received information that the young girl's condition is not as what's being talked about publicly, and that there's a government cover up on this and that type of stuff. Is that what you're talking about, Marie? Is that in the absence of an official update, you get that kind of a speculation, and then an issue even gets further weaponized?
Well, yeah, because, I mean, social media is everywhere. So it's not like in the old days where the government almost controlled the media and what went out. Now everybody's kind of having a say. So it is important that there is a kind of a standard, if you like, almost in terms of, we have standards in terms of journalism and reporting. And that's where people should be able to rely on to get their information from and be able to question them when you're seeing other things. And I think if there's a silence on that side, then the other side is going to just take over. And we don't want that. You know, we don't want that kind of amateur, unregulated journalism, just, you know, just sensationalism.
Okay. Andrea's nodding in agreement there.
Yeah. Wasn't there also an issue where there was an Algerian man was named, and actually by a media outlet who had no.
Well, he didn't. That media outlet didn't name him, but they provided information that allowed others to name him. Just to be fair.
Yeah. So it's as Marie says, if there's official, and it's also as John says, if there's official response, then you won't have the social media influencers and that coming up and you know, giving false information.
Mm-hmm. Deputy Marion Harkin has called for a national debate on immigration. Last week's riots were at least in part driven by negative attitudes towards immigration. In Donegal, we had attempts to satellite accommodation. Some accommodation that wasn't occupied was in fact burnt to the ground or severely damaged. Just this week, refugees in Falkara had a masked man wearing a balaclava outside their property, chanting out, 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 blaring rebel music. There was no guards there for 5, 6, 7 minutes. Do you believe we need a national conversation on it? I'll go to you first, if that's all right, Dr. Andrea Edmond. And if we do, what does that even look like? It seems like such a complex issue here that we are purposely not talking about it.
Well, see, this is the problem. You know, in it, we have a vacuum because we're not talking about it. And this is where we have false information and social media playing a part. Our experience in Duhri, we have Ukrainian families. And the experience that we have had as a small village has been nothing but positive.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're hearing negative stories about immigration. You know,
can I draw a distinction, though? Because the stories I'm hearing generally seems to be not about Ukrainian people here. Primarily, it seems to be about international protection applicants that from what I hear or see, seems to be the majority of the concern amongst at least some in the public out there.
Well, then a debate needs to happen. But I mean, it's having vigilantes take it upon themselves. So because there is a vacuum, because there isn't, a discussion and a plan, it just doesn't seem to be. And this is happening across the world. I just listened to a debate in Canada where, you know, for centuries we've accepted immigrants. But now there's issues to do with homelessness and the lack of homes and that. And that's not the problem of the immigrants. It's the problem of a lack of planning and foresight. But as I said, you know, there is a lot of positives with immigration. And for example, as I was saying about Duhri, our school has been kept open.
Mm-hmm.
Our shops have been kept open. You know, our village is vibrant. The Ukrainian men are participating in the men's shed and doing loads. They're, you know, and the positives are not coming out there. And I think that there's a huge issue as well.
Yep, it's a fair point, and I'm sure there's positive stories coming out of Milford as well, John.
Oh, absolutely. We don't have issues of that kind. But what the issue is here is that these people were introduced into communities and into society in the middle of the night, which immediately aroused suspicion. There was no communications with communities to say, look, this is who they are. They have been vetted and you have nothing to worry about. The Sunday Business Post, the Red Sea poll on Sunday, it reflected what people are talking
what
about.
What was
for
that?
The last
I didn't I didn't see that, John.
It was in relation to Ukrainian refugees. Have we enough of them here? Basically, 3 in 5 people were saying we already have enough. Only 3% said we should have any more. And I mean, that reflects there's a hostility there towards them. There's this belief that they're stealing all our social welfare payments and all this kind of thing. You're getting that everywhere. You go into a supermarket, you see a couple of Ukrainians doing their shopping quietly and somebody else whispering to somebody else. Those people shouldn't be here, and there's expletives being used all over the place. And this is a regular occurrence that I hear everywhere. There's a high degree of ignorance around that. The Ukrainians that I've been in touch with and that I communicate with are lovely people. They're a bit like ourselves, and I feel dreadfully sorry that there's so many thousands of miles from home that they have lost everything. And no matter what they get in Ireland, it will never make up for what they've lost, and we don't know how long they're going to be here. To say that they're taking up spaces and homes and all that kind of thing is not quite true.
Okay,
the government has failed to deal with that.
Do you think, however, you might hear commentary about Ukrainian people here, and a lot of them are friends now in the community, their children are friends with children. What I hear and what I see is when it's a busload of military-aged fighting men, that's primarily where I hear people's concerns for right or wrong, Marie. It's difficult to talk about because, you know, people don't want necessarily talk about it because they don't want to be labelled one way or another. And maybe this feeds into why the conversation is not happening.
Yeah, and what would a debate on immigration focus on? Because really it needs to look at resources, because we're almost back to where we started. Like, you have a situation in inner city Dublin, and are you really just creating the same situation in different areas of the country? Because if you don't back it up with the resources, I work in domestic violence, so obviously my contact with these different communities is from a particular angle, but already we're coming across issues where, you know, the accommodation that either Ukrainian or IPAS candidates are in is not suitable. It's causing huge social problems. There's no backup in terms of any national support. You know, trying to look at, even in terms of follow through on immigration and housing, there are different systems. Nobody's kind of liaising with statutory bodies around how to deal with that. This problem has only just started, you know, like it is going to, and it's expanding in all different levels because of the lack of just planning and the lack of long-term sight in terms of where this is going to go.
Yeah, but even in asking the question, Marie, it's been actually really quite enlightening because you're coming at it from a different angle to what we ordinarily hear. You know, maybe that is part of the conversation that we need to have. What problems are we creating in trying to offer a solution? If we don't offer that solution with wraparound services, better supports, better accommodations, and so on.
Yeah, no, I think, and that's what I'm saying, what would a conversation on immigration look like? Because if it's just a political, you know, mechanism to just raise over your point scoring thing, then you're in danger of inflaming the situation even more. But there does need to be a good conversation. But who's around the table and who's leading it? And Marion would be good, you know, I would have no doubts about that. But she needs backup as well from the national government around things.
Andrea, did you want to come back in there?
Planning is key. I agree with both John and Marie. Planning is key. And as Marie says, what happens? I mean, there's been a huge impact on tourism. I know even just in our own area, there's been, it was funny this weekend, we had a craft and I was speaking to people who were in a village where a group of men had come and, you know, unawares, just came in the middle of the night. That reflects a lack of planning, that reflects a lack of community engagement, which causes these negative feelings and things like that. You know, there just doesn't seem to be any foresight. We're talking about putting immigrants into tents because they don't have housing.
So what do we do then? You see, this is it, and this is now where the conversation starts getting a little bit sticky, Andrea. Do we then say until such time as we can provide adequate services that we discourage people from coming here? And some would argue that the government's plans to change the level of payments to Ukrainian refugees and accommodation rules is part of that. But it's kind of happening sneakily, if you know what I mean. Like, if we are maxed out in terms of resources, clearly not space, but in terms of resources, then do we have to have that conversation about whether or not we can adequately provide international protection?
But are we maxed out in resources, or is it just a lack of planning?
Well, if you try and go to the GP or get your child into a school or get an appointment in the hospital, some would say, or a dentist or that matter, some people would say, yeah, resources are maxed out. I'm not saying that clearly because I don't have enough information to suggest. But John, I'll put the same question to you then. I mean, how do we have that conversation about whether or not we need to stem the flow of people into the country?
From a practical point, there is accommodation. I would know of accommodation here in Fannin that's been approved since last Easter time. is that there's no room in schools, there's no room in second level, and there's no room in GP practices for them. We probably have about 100 or 150 approved in this area here. We have no objections to them. We have nothing against Ukrainians. They're lovely people to meet. And there's some lovely things going on. We have a Gaelic school down in Cashland. They'll be happy for me to say this. They have a Ukrainian girl in infants there, and she has no English. Mother's no English. But all the parents who are having birthday parties and all that kind of thing, that has become a part of society. They're all asked along and they become part of the community. And that's what you need to have. And the more of that we can promote and develop at a community level, that you invite them into your home. Why wouldn't you invite them into your home? Mm. Because they're at the same school as your children are.
And that happens too. Yeah, I know that happens. Yeah. There is. Yeah. Okay. Listen, I the hour has flown in, as it always does. John McAteer, thank you very much for your time and insights, as always. Have a lovely weekend, John.
Thank you, Sean.
Okay. Marie Hainsworth, Dr. Marie Hainsworth, thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you.
Always a pleasure. And last but, you know, certainly not least, Dr. Andrea Redmond, Artist and Community Development Worker. Thanks for your insights and your opinions. It's really appreciated. So just want to remind you, Seamus Gunn is coming up just after 10 o'clock answering your legal questions. So if you do have a question, please get in touch with us right now and I can put them to Seamus. So very cold and bright today with sunshine and scattered showers. Some showers will fall as hail or sleet. Highest temperatures just 2 to 6 degrees today. Okay, we'll be back with more, as I say, after the news and obituary notices. Stay right where you are.